it's easier for them to leave me out, I think, because of the technology.
Yeah.
They're in the room together, yeah. And I'm on the screen.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 351 for the week of April 19th, 2021. I am Doctor's Doctor, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Hostile Metaphor, Sarah D. Bunting.
Your mom's a three-legged race.
Alaskan Klee K. Tara Ariano.
Woof, stop fighting the process, woof woof.
And Terrarium Succulent, Catherine Van Arendonk.
I seem low maintenance, but am not.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us is Vulture's very own Catherine Van Arendonk. Hello, Catherine!
Hello!
I'm so happy to be here.
Yay! When it was time for couples therapy to return, we had really no other choice of guest to come back and talk about it.
So honored.
Season 2 of Showtime's Couples Therapy, not the very trashy one on VH1, which I have also watched, is up. It dropped April 18th. In this show, Dr. Orna Guralnick works with three couples experiencing difficulties in their relationships. This season, it's Michael and Michal, Gianni and Matthew, and Tashira and Drew in New York. Originally, this was supposed to take place over 20 weeks, but then at the end of the second episode, Governor Cuomo announces the first case of COVID in New York City, and that complicates things and causes the treatment to take place over a longer timeline and also move everyone out of the office space for a time. There are 9 episodes, all of which are available on the Showtime app and various Showtime places right now. Let's do the Chen check-in. Just briefly, before we get into the nitty-gritty, let our listeners know, Catherine, should they watch Couples Therapy?
Absolutely, yes.
Great.
Yes.
Sarah?
Yes, absolutely.
Dave?
Not my jam, but I appreciate that this is a better built, this type of show, so I'm going to say yes.
I think absolutely yes. I didn't realize how much I missed it until it came back. So, yeah, it's fascinating. So let us get into why.
Can I ask a couple, like, setup questions before
Please.
We go? That I was just... So you mentioned something about the set or the not set and that the cameras were hidden
yeah,
or something?
Yeah, Catherine yes. can speak to that more because she's actually interviewed the filmmakers.
Fantastic.
So tell us yeah. about that.
So the key question of the show is... Can you film therapy without the Schrodinger's cat problem where the act of filming it destroys, like messes with the thing that you are filming?
Yep. Right.
And they were really very concerned about this. And so, you know, at some point you can't fight it. Like you are filming it. Everyone has to know that. Everyone has to go in understanding that that's what's going to happen.
Right.
But if you actually have... And cameras there all the time, you are also going to think about it way too much. So they decided that the only way to do it was to... And Dr. Orna, who's a fantastic therapist, was legitimately concerned about retaining something of the therapist's frame where, like, you come into a space, it is safe, there is no outside world intrusion, you are just doing the work. And she knew that if there were cameras around and, like, other people there, it would absolutely mess with that. So they had to build a set that it is on a soundstage, but it has an exterior door. So the couples can walk up to this door from the outside. They walk into what looks like a completely regular office hallway, which you see in the show.
Yeah.
Right.
And then Dr. Orna is in an office. She opens the door to the hallway. They go into the office. They come out. For them, once they say, yes, I agree to be filmed, they never see cameras, except for in the parts that, like, you see in their houses where they're clearly, you know, people come in and they agree to, So the way that they did that, and they wouldn't tell me, they wouldn't give me a diagram, although I did ask, but but they have a lot of two-way glass, which you can see in the hallway. There's, like, a big mirror. And then in Dr. Orna's office, if you look at the walls, they're sort of divided into thirds. So the lower third is, like, a bookshelf. The upper third is maybe another bookshelf or a window. And then often in the middle space, it looks like there's a sort of half-empty shelf with, like, faces and things on it. And through reflecting mirrors, that is actually a camera. And like, you can't see it because there is a mirror reflecting the opposite wall so that all you see at a certain angle, so that it looks exactly like it is just a seamless wall there. And unless you sort of shifted yourself in the right way to the light, you would see absolutely nothing. It's amazing to me, like the work that they did, because it looks so beautiful.
Yeah. And they're doing pan shots and stuff like that. So if they're managing to keep the cameras hidden for the sake of the, you know, the constructive dialogue happening in the room, they did a really good job masking where those cameras are going to be moving and everything. And, you know, I'd imagine also keeping them silent and whatnot. So,
So the other thing is they had to have, they wanted live camera operators so that they could get these like, and like changing focus shots and things. And so people would come in and they were like, all right, it's starting. And then like, nobody was allowed to talk or pee for the entire hour that they are filming.
Like Amazon.
Which is really,
No.
And it's a real challenge, right? And so they can kind of whisper to each other, but like, if you're hoping that the guy across from you is getting a shot, there's really all you can do is cross your fingers. Very technically difficult shoot.
And I guess it's just worth saying, if you haven't watched the show and you're just Couples Therapy, you might think it's a little more towards the garbage show end of the spectrum, but it's much more of a documentarian product. So it's sort of like, kind of like having your cake and eating it too.
Well, I mentioned this in my review, which I'll link, and Catherine reviewed it as well. But it like, it doesn't have the reality TV trappings of like, there's no talking heads where it's like, and what I meant by this was blah, blah, blah. Like there's no Frankenbites. There's none of the reality TV bullshit that they use to craft a narrative. Like it's just long stretches of watching people have therapy. Like, and that's it. that's the show.
Yeah, although the thing that I think is really interesting about it is that they actually do have to take sort of the premise of a reality TV show, which is we set this all up and we gave you this special, it's like the Bachelor Mansion, but for therapy, this like space that is particularly designed to film this thing.
Yeah.
But that is exactly the thing that then lets them not intrude on it rather than, you know, like go into your little confessional booth or whatever.
So we get all new couples this season. We'll get into each of them in a second. First, I just want to take a moment and ask Catherine, was any part of you disappointed there wasn't a figure this season on the order of season one's Mao? Or was there for you? Tell the listener and our panelists who didn't watch it a little about Mao. This is, by the way, transparently to make Sarah put season one on her fabled list.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. So season one, they have a couple named Mao and Annie, and Mao is just the biggest asshole you have ever seen.
Sold.
And you spend
Welcome to the list, boyo.
You spend the entire set, like season, being like, is he going to realize that he's an and you know, for almost all of the couples, one of the magic things about this show for me is that when you get sort of most of the way through the arc, someone will realize something that they truly did not consider before. And like, you can see it on their face when it hits them. It is this like hair on the back of your neck sort of moment as they suddenly, and there are some fantastic moments like that in the first season and in season two as well. And with Mao, you're like, what would that even look like for this man? And how is this relation? There's like sex stuff. I mean, here's how intense the Mao fixation was. New York Times critic Margaret Lyons and I did a deep dive on like their Instagram to try to figure out more about their lives, because it was just,
I said I would watch it, guys.
Okay.
I said I would watch it.
Okay.
You got me.
Great.
Okay, so Sarah, this show is new to you. I also know you enjoyed getting herded into it by Orna's doggy Nico, and I assume that as well you were attracted to the processiness of it.
I'd like to say more generally about Showtime that I feel like they're not getting enough credit in the documentary space overall. They've had some really good true crime stuff. I think they maybe don't associate themselves as much with that branding as HBO does. and they're not trying to eat HBO's lunch. And they're also not in the position where of like stars, where it's like, you know, no, we exist. There's 17 of us in the 700s on your, you know, cable dial. And, you know, Starz is doing a lot of good stuff, too. But this and Outcry and Love Fraud in the last 6 months, like, I feel like these are shows that, like, I recommend them. People are like, yeah, that was really good. And then they go back to forgetting that Showtime exists. So if this is, you know, yet this is yet another reason to make that a destination for prestige documentary programming that is really thoughtfully done, more so in some ways, I think, than HBO, which is just like, I mean, that The Vow had 9 episodes is sort of exhibit A of, you know, someone is not paying as close attention as they could be. Couples Therapy specifically was like a flashback to my old advice column on Tomato Nation, which was called The Vine, but like in all the best ways, like that people come in with these narratives that they don't want to be shaken from. And when Orna is talking to her clinical advisor about her frustrations with trying to untrack her clients' frustrations, that just reminded me of getting like a 17 screen screed from someone who was like legitimately aggrieved about some goddamn first birthday party, which, like, you know, we've all been there and we all feel your anger. You know, what if, like, here's what I'm hearing? And they're like, no, like, I mean, it just was very, it was relatable. These, quote, highly developed narratives, and they're being, quote, very dug into their view of the other person. I think she's really good at trying to get people to see what she sees without being like combative about it. And it reminded me in a strange way of like if High Maintenance were a documentary that was explicitly about therapy, I got that same sort of like loving eye rolliness from it, for lack of a better term, that I love High Maintenance. And I thought that this was sort of similar in tone, that it was like this, you know, this like familial fondness for these people and all of their frustrating humanity. Mostly, I don't know what the tone was towards the infamous Mao, and I guess I'm going to find out because top of the list. But yeah, this is a good show. And also it's like, it's not, if it's not for you, then it's 26 minutes that it's you so spend fast. Trying it, but yeah. it flies right by. And then you do start getting invested in these people and you start talking back to the screen, like Gianni and Matthew. That, you know, one of them is recently in recovery and there's like, I mean, there is just really a lot of backstory and not everyone's first language is English. And by like their second episode, I was like making like snitty notes about them. Like, who am I going to send this to?
Yeah.
Like, who is it? Who is this for? Who cares what I think?
Yeah.
But it's a really interesting show that there's really nothing else like it. And I think everybody should give it a look. And okay. Showtime documentary programming generally, like really, they have a lot of good music docs too. So.
All right. Well, let's talk about the couples. Catherine, let's get your take on Michael and Michal.
Oh boy. So Michal is the closest to a Mao-esque figure that this season has.
I would agree with that.
And what I mean by that is just the incredible external abrasiveness of her personality, that they come in, I think, the most actively aggressive to one another. They're an Orthodox Jewish couple. This is actually not a source of any of their tension, although that was a hard one for me to understand, but that's why I'm not in that marriage. And but she is frustrated that he is not presenting her with like a version of this life that she wants, and he just seems completely apathetic, and she is screaming at him, like literally screaming, to do more, say more, be present more. And there's talking about like speaking back to the screen. There's a moment when he says that he just doesn't have any preferences of any kind for anything. And I wrote down like, that's not how people work.
No,
that's not what no. you know.
Unflavored for me.
And so they have this really interesting challenge where Dr. Orna has to try to get past Michal's like exterior screaming and get to a point where she's trying to figure out why that is, but also uncover like why it, and very correctly point to the fact that he's not, it's maybe instead of thinking about it as laziness, what if you thought about it as something broke and he's just opting out, like,
right.
You know, which is so insightful, but also it's obvious. But once you, it's one of those things you see people in person and you hear all the particularities and it's so easy to get stuck in all of the details of their lives and like, why is he like that? He's in, no person acts that way.
Yeah.
But these big general truths are still meaningful. So that is sort of the most, I think, flashy couple. You talked a little bit about Matthew and Gianni and there's alcoholism being a really big part of that story. The other couple here is Tashira and Drew, and she became a single mother. She then got pregnant with Drew, and he wanted to be a present father and wanted this to be a relationship, and just the whole season is her trying to figure out basically whether or not she wants to actually be in this relationship or not.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating to watch both of them. And he also makes some bad choices.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's like, they've really selected wisely in terms of like, you know, in the initial presentation, you think you're supposed to quote unquote feel a certain way. But then as more information comes out, like, they both seem real tiring to me. Like, I don't want to be anywhere near that house. It's like, hand me a child and we will go to the park and you two just do whatever you're going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it, yeah, like that is definitely a situation where, Orna has a line in the premiere where she's like, you know, people don't always want to fix it. What they want is to accuse.
And or to yes, be they heard. Want justice.
They want justice. Like, they want, and, you know, this is something I talk about with my therapist, that it's like, in the court of the following that doesn't exist, I would like a ruling. And, like, we just have, you know, after all these years, sort of a shorthand where she's like, I rule in your favor, obviously. But that is definitely a big part of therapy, and it's a huge part of the therapist's job to just be like, okay, let's get the sort of petty childlike instincts out of the way first, and then maybe we can uncover what's actually going on here. And in the case of Tashi and Drew, it's really just like that she keeps coming back to this, the fact that she's like, well, I never really wanted this. And it's like, but here we all are.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the second episode, when there's like the montage of COVID announcements, you're like, oh fuck.
Shit.
This is going to be not boring.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And this complicates Orna's whole thing too. And that's another thing she talks about, where it's like, as soon as lockdown happens, it's like, people have to sort of give up their exit fantasies in couples therapy too, where they can't even think like, I'm just going to get away from this situation and go to the coffee shops. Like, no, you're not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Guess what? No, you're not.
I like my literal first note on that was like, oh fuck, it's COVID. Cut to Tashi on the fire escape like, with a little umbrella and a space heater. Like, nope, I'm not coming back in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah, I was so worried because I knew that they had started production. I talked with them like early last spring. I remember sitting on my driveway talking to them, actually, because my kids were inside and it was the only place that I could like get quiet enough
to
talk with
Catherine
them.
On the fire escape.
Yeah.
Got it.
And they had started production on this season. And I was like, what are you going to do? And they're like, we don't know. but I was so worried that the whole season would be Zoom after that first, you know, two episodes.
Yeah.
And the relief I felt when they just did a bit of it and then went back to the in-person. I didn't realize how much there was like me holding that tension in until I saw them come back into the room, which mm-hmm. I don't think that speaks to anything else going on in my life or
certainly
my emotions.
Well, and Orna talks about that too, where she said, I mean, we heard a little bit of that in the intro clip where she's saying like how the physical space makes such a difference in her work too. And especially with Michael and Micha, where she's like, they're just fighting. And she physically cannot break in because they either can't or won't hear her when she's trying to redirect them. And because they're in the same room and she's not, you know, yeah. So it's like less than useless for her to be on Zoom with particularly the two of them. But then in other ways, it's like makes it more intimate, too. Like when she's talking to Tashi and Drew and they have to like go get the baby and then like, well, here he is. This is the issue. Kind of like he's adorable, but he's
all
also
three of
the
us
thing.
Are here now. Yeah.
Right. It's making Tashi be like all Dante and Clerks about her life. You know, like I wasn't even supposed to be here. Like, well, tough, you know. But yes, it is. It's obviously a huge relief when they get back to the office. So we have to talk about Orna. Start, Catherine. Talk about Orna and how much we love her.
I love her so much. I am very embarrassed by this, but I did because Vulture did like a early screening of the first episode, and I moderated a Q&A with her and with Josh Kriegman and Kim Roberts, who are the like executive producers. And there was one of those lengthy like Zoom setup problems beforehand where we all had lights and we're all trying to like fiddle with the lights. And then it's like, I think this mic should go over here. And could you like center it in your screen or whatever? And Orna was having like a particularly long problem with like getting the light. And I just sat there like for like way it was great podcasting, but I just sat there sort of like, I think you're cool, like watching
you're dreamy.
She really
I mean, she just has the perfect timbre. There's something about like the patterns and the like necklaces she chooses that mm-hmm. are like, and you know, I think we all sort of understand looking behind that particular veil, like how therapists sort of deliberately present and like there's an opacity by design.
Yeah.
And I am always trying to pick at like, well, I don't know if you've read such and so. And she's like nodding, like I acknowledge that you're speaking. And I'm like, fucker, it's seriously been 20 years. Can you tell me what's on your DVR? Do you have one? That is one of the processy things that I thought was really cool about the show. And also maybe doing a little second screening on Etsy of a couple of necklaces. It doesn't all have to be serious.
And the way that she is able to be incredibly compassionate when you have these moments, particularly later in the season when people start to get into childhood stuff that is really, really, really upsetting.
Yeah.
And you can palpably feel how sincere and how upset she is about the things that she hears. And yet she is able to control that to still, like, it is hard for me to imagine being in that seat and not being like, fuck this therapy. Like, it is such an incredible testament to her training and to how skilled she is toward the end of the season. Also, a couple moments, especially when Michal eventually starts to have breakthroughs, I sitting in the therapist's seat would just be like, fuck yeah. And like, I don't think that's probably
an
appropriate therapeutic
Total same.
Response.
Yeah, she really does have a gift for, like, the whole point of it is that she's not on anyone's side, But I think in her case, she's on everyone's side.
Yeah.
And that's what I think makes her so effective, is that, and also that she's able to convey that effectively. Like, sometimes they're really resisting and they're like in their heads about being victims, and she just persists. Mm-hmm, so yeah, thumbs up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would attend.
It's a great show.
It's time to go around the dial. Choo-choo. We're back on the train. The train's back. The around the dial train that makes no metaphoric sense. Tara, it's your turn. Go first.
Okay. Once again, not so much a highbrow, lowbrow as two middle brows this week, starting with Younger, the final season. The first four episodes of season 7 dropped on Paramount Plus, and I watched all four in a row yesterday. I don't necessarily recommend that. It's maybe too much. We have Liza and Charles in the previous season finale. He proposed to her, and then in the first episode, she's like, she kind of dithers about it, and then she goes back to him and is like, "I want to be with you, but I don't want to get married," because she is divorced and he is as well. And he's like, "Well, I don't want to not be married, so goodbye." And it's like so dumb because we all know it's the final season and they're gonna get together, like whatever. But then they also introduce this new complication guy, who's like so not going to be the guy.
And I wish that's what his name was. It's me. And he had like a sign, new complication guy.
Completely. Yeah. Yes. NU complication guy. Yeah. And it's Matt Passmore. He's like the teacher / like ex-boyfriend from Frayed. Remember that guy? Remember Frayed, the Australian show we watched last year? It's him. And he's a surfer. And he's like, he comes to the, he's maybe going to write a book. Michael Urie is his agent. And then she goes, and of course she has sex with him, spoiler. And then she's like, "I got all his journals and we could probably just publish them as is," because she hasn't opened them. And then they're just like all doodles of dicks because he's an idiot. It's like, this is all completely ridiculous. Speaking of ridiculous, that Josh is still here. Get out of here, Josh. No one cares about your story anymore. Like, they introduced this thing with his ex. I don't even remember her name. Claire? Is that her name?
Yeah.
It's what's-her-face from Bridgerton. So, speaking of things we don't care about, like, she's not going to be a factor. She's on Bridgerton now. But then, like, she shows up and she's like, "Get the baby a passport because I'm going to take her to Ireland," because she's Irish. And then for 1 second, he's like, "I think she's going to kidnap her," and then nothing comes of that. It's really that she has a new boyfriend, and that's the problem. But so I texted our friend Adam, past and future guest of the show, and was like, "I'm so sick of Josh. Throw Josh in the garbage." And his response was, "The issue with Josh is there's no reason for him to still be on the show. Like, that Josh is not the complication guy is the problem. Like, the writers don't even care about Josh anymore." And the fact that he's still on the show and Diana's not on the show, throw the show in the garbage. Like, what are you doing? I'm sure it's because Miriam Shore is doing something else wonderful. Yes, I hope it's not that they couldn't afford to pay her.
No, she had scheduling problems. It's sort of interesting coming out of COVID, right? People had all of these schedules figured out for all of their shooting things, but then everything stopped and then everything came back at the same time. And it just totally, everyone just fought over whose contracts and what case was going to win. Yeah.
Anyway, sidebar, Nico Tortorella, one of the most annoying people in real life.
Oh my God.
Nico the dog, number one Nico Tortorella, like 589th. But anyway.
He was on The Following. End of story.
Exactly. I'm here to see the show end, obviously.
Excuse me, they were on The Following. Sorry.
They were on, yes.
I'm here to see Younger end, of course. There's no way I'm not going to watch the rest of the season. But, like, all of this business with Liza and Charles is very tiresome because we all know how it's going to end. Like, stop wasting our time. Moving on. Mythic Quest, which is coming back the first Friday of May, I believe, dropped another COVID special. And this one is more conceptual than the first one. It's not on Zoom. They're all back at the office. And this one is like the idea is Ian, the Rob McElhenney character, made up a holiday that's based on one of their games called Everlight. And so once a year, they have this big party at the office, and they do a big, like, battle, like a LARPing battle. And he always fixes it to make someone who needs a win, win this thing. And last year it was David, the loser, was played by Rickety Cricket from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He is still riding high on his win from last year. But anyway, all of their plans go awry. This was, to me, not as successful as the first special. Dave, do you agree?
Yeah, I put this in the could have done without the gimmick episode column.
Yes.
It wasn't quite as bad as, like, let's do a claymation episode, but it's getting there because it is the episode. Is it out? Can we talk about?
Yeah, it's out.
Okay.
Yeah.
In the real world, there is this LARP event tied to the video game they're making. But then, like, near the end, it becomes, like, this alternate reality. You know, now they got sucked into the world and they're just playing out the end game in the world. So, you know, now it's not just the bad guy. It's the bad guy and he's a devil. And there's not a stuffed animal. It's now a dragon, that kind of stuff, yeah. Right? And it's, like, that's, like, a bit too much for my taste. I don't care for those types of episodes. A lot of people do. And after your jam, this episode has a lot of it.
Yeah.
But it's also not very funny.
It was a step too far. I agree. The thing about Mythic Quest overall is that it served your interest if you love fantasy and gaming, and it serves them kind of if you don't, because it has the Danny Pudi character who also thinks it's all stupid, and that's like the premise of the show. And like, he was my favorite part of it because he's like, I will be in this tournament, but if I win, Everlight is canceled forever because it's dumb and I hate it. It's like, okay, I'm that guy. Great.
A long, long time ago, I worked for a company in Los Angeles that made a game like this way back when online games were just starting. If you know your online games, this was between that Meridian 59 game or whatever it was and EverQuest. EverQuest hasn't even come out yet. I'm telling you, anybody who's making these games are not showing up for our LARP event. Even though it's not too cool for them, they think it's too cool for them. Based on personal experience, this episode, you know, maybe now it's changed, you know, like cosplay and stuff are now kind of mainstream, but I can't see anybody who's actually programming these games showing up for that event based on personal experience.
I agree.
This is the same guy who, these are the same people, and we'll not mention names, but there was a guy, one of them talking about, we would play Tekken 3 in the lobby, and, you know, we all played video games all our lives, except for Tara, who didn't. So when we played, Tara would usually lose, except this one guy she beat. And he was like, duh, the controller's broken. Like, he really was
that
guy.
That's my favorite guy. That's my favorite guy. The controller doesn't work guy.
The controller
it's
doesn't work
guy. Yeah. Take the L.
Yeah.
He's dead now. I don't know. He's probably alive. But he's
you to pick Jack.
He's not in our lives. Anyway, the show continues to be very uneven. Like, some episodes, David Hornby is the guy's name. I finally remembered it. Some of the episodes are really good and some of them are really not good. And so I'm interested to see how season two is. We have screeners, but we haven't watched them yet. So, you know, I still overall like it, but there definitely is like a big difference based on who's writing them.
It kind of felt like they had saved so much money they could blow it all on one episode, and this was what they did, and they put the spectacle in front of the story.
Other thing I couldn't stop thinking about is that I know how many times their production got shut down because of positive COVID tests, and while you're watching them like do all this very physical fighting, it's like, guys, maybe you did this a little too soon.
Like,
anyway.
Universe telling you something?
That's why you're supposed to use ranged attacks. Fireballs, arrows.
I'm more positive on, I think, Mythic Quest generally. I think it's a pretty well-built workplace sitcom, and often the plotting of it, the writing of it is, like, even when there are uneven parts, there is almost always some piece of an episode that I am attached to enough that I can overlook whatever other issues that I think don't work particularly strong. I agree that the first COVID episode was a much stronger hit for me. I did enjoy that in this one, they have clearly still quarantined F. Murray Abraham because he is very old. And then they just absolutely write it into the episode where they're like, we can't sacrifice American treasure. And then they just say the character name instead of the actor name. And then he just stays on a screen, which I did enjoy.
So that's that. For my plug, our friend Dave Chen of Chen Check-In fame, it's not his only credit. He's also a co-host of the Slash Film podcast. He had me on his Patreon podcast over the weekend to talk about the end of Made for Love, the HBO Max series. And I was very happy to do so. And so I will link to his Patreon. It is behind the paywall, of course. That's how Patreon works. But his Patreon is great. He has lots of fun people on to talk about all kinds of topics. And I am a supporter of his. And if you enjoy him and the Slash Film podcast, you should be too. So check that out.
Catherine, what do you have?
Okay, I am obsessed with a PBS docuseries that starts this week. It is, now, I have done a couple different media things on it, and it literally every time a publicist emails me to say that I have forgotten one of the subsidiary partners that makes it, it's PBS Frontline Independent Lens Topic, ? But it is an 8-episode, and they're full hour-long episode docuseries about a guy named Larry Krasner, who was elected to be the district attorney for the city of Philadelphia in 2019 and is currently and now up for re-election. The primary is sort of now, and I think the election is in the fall. And they follow him from the moment of the, like, right before the election and the election day, and then sort of through the experience of being the DA. And the fascinating thing for me about him as a documentary subject and the way that this docuseries is built is that he is a super progressivist lawyer with a long history of representing protesters, of like taking down big corporations.
He was a former public defender.
Yes. And he fundamentally does not believe in most of what the justice system considers to be the appropriate punishments for crimes, mm-hmm. and also does not really believe in that many of them are crimes. And he is now in a position to incarcerate people and doesn't really believe in incarceration as a tool. He is in a position to charge drug offenses and does not believe they should be offenses. Same goes for prostitution, and is really invested in taking the entire criminal justice system for the city of Philadelphia and completely dismantling it, which is not really what a district attorney's job is. And people keep bringing that up, and you have to at some point be like, that is a fair point. Like, that's not really. And it is completely wild watching him try to communicate these ideas to regular citizens. He's pretty good at it when he does a talking head interview. He clearly is good at a press conference, but particularly later in the series, there is a sequence where there is an encampment of people who are struggling with homelessness, and there's a lot of drug use going on, and previous administrations would have like arrested all of them and just pulled them out. He doesn't think they're doing anything illegal, and so he won't. And the citizens are furious because like people are shitting in their flower boxes, and like there are syringes everywhere. So he shows up at this town hall, and they are being very polite about like, please just tell us what the plan is. And he's like, fundamentally, this shouldn't be happening. And they're like, but here we all are. And so it is this, and he does, I mean, he fucks up that town hall so bad. And the docuseries is as interested in that as it is these kind of big ideas that he is really wrestling with. I was completely mesmerized by like every minute of this thing. And I have not seen the last two episodes, and I have sent several emails about where they are, and it has not happened for me yet. It's because I think they're still making them, which is fair, I guess.
Fine. Just take me on a ride along. Hello.
Whatever.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one. And I think it has a lot of, not like DNA, but if you liked City So Real, you will like
yes.
that, I think.
Absolutely. They feel like similar projects to me. My review, I also talk a lot about how it actually feels quite a bit like The Wire in the way that it is a sort of thought experiment and like the purity of what a thought experiment is, but then pushed up against the reality of giant institutions. So that is the thing that I am really obsessed with right now. The plug that I want to do, you can find me at Vulture. I have a regular podcast, ATV. We have TV chatting and yelling and TV book club, a lot of yelling. But I also wanted to mention that I have also started doing an every other week podcast with my Vulture colleague, Jesse David Fox, who Shanghai'd me. Do people still say that? Is that an appropriate use of... Anyhow, I got roped into being our comedy critic a while back and then gradually became more fascinated with stand-up comedy as like a form. And so he has a podcast that I guess is not mine. Also, I'm the co-host of it. And every other week, we watch an old comedy special and then dissect it to tiny, tiny bits. It's awesome. A Patreon only podcast, but it's worth your time because you can force us to watch things.
Yay! So.
Sarah D. Bunting.
This is not, in fact, a single property called Why Did You Kill Me, Sasquatch? Sorry, oh. David T. Cole.
These
two separate properties. Mm-hmm. There's also a joke here about it's neither highbrow nor lowbrow, but in Sasquatch's case,
all-brow.
A very giant all-brow creature. Yeah. In fact, they are both highbrow-ish true crime from streaming services. Let's start with Why Did You Kill Me, which dropped on Netflix last week. I think it might have gotten lost in the shuffle of some other stuff, but I would check it out. It's really good. The way it's marketed is, quote, a family catfishes the dudes they think killed their sister / daughter using MySpace. So that should locate you in time. But it's a lot more than just a catfish story, not least because it all took place in the mid-aughts, which means that we should really be calling it Belinda-ing instead of catfishing. But anyway... one of the appealing things to me about this was that this kind of family is somewhat unusual to see in the unscripted true crime space. They have had repeated law enforcement contact. There are issues with substances, both taken and dealt. These are not people who trust the cops. They will not assume the cops will handle this kind of business, so they handle the business themselves. And the documentary accepts that as... a wisdom. And then the cops in the documentary also have to accept this and sort of work with what's there. And they do. They adapt to this mistrust and like opacity about what really might have been going on with this family. And usually what you're seeing is placid, sort of very well-fed, fully toothed middle and upper class white families who believe in law enforcement and have really not had any contact with it until whatever tragedy is being explained on camera occurred. You don't see like carceral, vicious cycle pipeline families like this generally. And that I think is, I think that's an experience that needs to be way more centered in this kind of narrative. The director, Frederick Monk, has never directed a feature before, and it can be a little rough around the edges, but he also knows how to animate and reenact social media interactions that are at the heart of this in a compelling way. And the sort of recreated desktop with like the little Netscape button on it. And like, there's like the Microsoft, like with the, you know, the paperclip that I was like, were we ever so young? This one was a little under the radar. So once again, that's called Why Did You Kill Me? Check it out. Sasquatch is not under the radar, I'm pretty sure. It shouldn't be. It's from the Duplass brothers, and it's about a 90s triple homicide that the lead investigator, David Holthouse, heard about and specifically heard pinned on Bigfoot. So it's three episodes. The first one is kind of about Sasquatch, and the second episode is kind of about the same part of the country that was in Murder Mountain, like Humboldt County pot growing, and about how the transition out of black market status is not been smooth sailing. And then the third episode braids those two things together to try to solve the case, but it's also letting the subjects converse with each other about the case's fundamental insolubility. In other words, it might seem like it's kind of painstakingly meandering through these two topics, but let it do what it's going to do, because once it gets where it's going, then it's like, well, here we are. Credits, which is rare. Like, I have to watch a lot of this stuff in the number of fourth episodes, and I'm like, are we still doing this?
Yeah.
So Sasquatch is good. It's on Hulu. And if you are someone who likes Outside Magazine long form articles, even though you would rather eat seven bowls of glass than camp, even for half a night, this is a good fit for you. I enjoyed it on that basis. Speaking of true crime and the books about them, Independent Bookstore Day is this Saturday, April 24th. You can get your previously owned and some new true crime online at my true crime bookshop. That's exhibitbbooks.com. I do take requests. I do not carry our very special 90210 book, but another bookstore in my neighborhood does, and I will be there on Saturday for an hour to sign it and talk with you about all things mad, bad, and or dangerous to know. That is the Bookmark Shop in Bay Ridge from noon to 1 p.m. on Saturday, and a link will be in the show notes if you're anywhere near the end of the earth, Brooklyn. I would love for you to come by our train to 86th Street.
Yeah!
Brandon Walsh.
What?
I want to say, just at the start, when Catherine was talking about Philly DA, I swear to God, my brain went, oh, that must be like the Shaggy DA, except it's like a Philly cheesesteak sandwich. And then, pause 1 second. No, that's probably not it. That's all right, guys, it's back. It's time for...
The stars at night are big and bright.
Keeping the heart of Texas. 911 Lone Star Report. I wish I could come to you with more exciting news, but this return, I guess it's the mid-season return.
Oh,
bad.
I'm so sorry for
they
you guys.
They did the character-centric episode. I don't know how many times I need to say this. Characters on the show are grist for the horrible injuries mill. Period. I don't care about their personal lives. I don't care if their dad's got cancer. Nothing. I want to see arms off of bodies. I want to see volcanoes on 6th Street. These are the things I tune in for 911. Not a big sob story about how Glump loves Grace or whatever that guy's character is. Like, I'm not here. I don't know. It's Gus, Boss,
Judd. He does
Chaz.
Look like. I do care very much about Rob Lowe character's skincare. Like that, oh. I think.
That's a good note for
yeah.
the show.
Glump.
Like, you know, I want to know about his skincare and also his like little tiny indigo coffee cups. Those are acceptable character arcs as long as they get full character arcs and we hear every detail of everything about the little cups.
Those are arcs that can start and finish within 2 minutes at a time. We don't need 44 minutes on how they met, how he met the hair care products, how they almost died in the river, et cetera, et cetera. So even though I'm still high on 911 Lone Star, boy, that was not a good episode to come back on. Yeah. I hope they double up next week. I hope that only means that next week it's going to be like volcanoes on volcanoes.
Yeah.
It's just going to be massive.
I demand 7 impalements minimum.
Yes.
All snake special.
Yes.
Thank
Less
you.
Gooey.
Great.
More kablooey.
I mean, this is the show that brought us exploding bull semen, and now yeah. it's like going the way of original 911
yeah.
with all these character episodes. No. Yeah. Thank you.
No.
Yeah, regular static bull semen. Come on.
No. Yeah. Come
usually
on.
At this point in time, I would play That's What I Love About Texas, but I can't this week because I didn't. So everybody's lost. Thank you very much, creators of that show.
Wait, we just have to add, we also find out that Grace is pregnant. And when she finds out she's just woken up from a coma or whatever, she starts crying. And I just wanted to add my hilarious joke, which is that she started crying because she realized she was going to have to give birth to Judd's giant head baby. And I can say that because I also have a giant head. But this guy's head, it's like 3 watermelons taped together. His head is so huge.
The term is single glump. Something the size of Judd's head is a glump. It's like stone.
Right, go ahead.
All right. On the next Extra Extra Hot Grate is Mega Super TV Lotto. We're all going to pick six numbers based on TV, and then we're actually going to play them, become millionaires, and you'll never hear from us again. That's the plan.
Yep. We don't make the rules.
Listen to the last ever Extra Extra Hot Grate by becoming a supporter on Patreon.com/extra hot grate. And then right here on the next EHG Prime, it is 50K Three Ways with the Nas Brittany Luce.
Just a note before we get into our extra credit topic, which comes to us from Mademoiselle Caroline. We had to skip the canon this week due to technical issues, so we will we'll try and fluff this one out. This one is called Passing the Test of Time, and Caroline writes, which 20-year-plus series did you enjoy way back then and still holds up now? Conversely, which can't you enjoy watching anymore? And since Mr. Dave Cole, you can tell she listens to the podcast, likes to make jokes at my expense for allegedly favoring certain TV series, neither he nor Tara can pick News Radio, nor Sarah the Sopranos. Valued guest may do as she pleases. And yeah, I saved fair, this fair one for Catherine because one of the features that they do on Appointment Television, one of her podcasts, is the old type, where they revisit an old show. So this is something Catherine has had recent and long-term experience with. So Catherine, why don't you start us off? Which perhaps old type topics have been successes, which have not?
Yeah, I did not expect how much I was going to jam out to Taxi, but wow.
Wow.
I dig it. Now, to be fair, it is a show that does a lot of social topics, and inevitably they are going to get some of them wrong.
Yeah.
And that is an experience watching that, for whatever reason, I don't care when they get it wrong.
Sure.
Because the characters are so charismatic. It is the kind of sitcom that it just feels so unlike what a network sitcom is allowed to do now.
Mm,
the setting totally is so different. The way that the characters are played. I want to give a special shout out here to Tony Danza's butt, which was doing things that I mean, there are just some special people in the world.
More like
and
Tony Dumpsa.
Yeah. And
yeah, it was more of a Jeff Cockaway guy, but I see where you're going.
You know, if you just go back and revisit maybe even just the pilot, you'll see that truly some fantastic work is being done by various cheeks involved in that process.
I listened to a podcast called I Said No Gifts, hosted by Bridger Weiniger, where the premise is he said no gifts and, you know, the guest brings a gift and then they talk about it. Mm-hmm. And when Casey Wilson was a gift, hers was a magnet of Tony Danza completely nude. And I want to see that.
I want to see that, too. I think Taxi, I'm in it for the vibes. And Taxi is vibes just in excess, that show.
Okay. Which old shows have not held up in your opinion and experience?
In completely paradoxical fashion, I think that the thing that I am fine with in Taxi, I can no longer handle in Scrubs, which is the like depictions of women and the sort of the gay panic jokes. Yep. And I am totally sure that this is a like me in the year 2021 thing, and that like 60 years from now, that we may be in such a completely different social place that I react to both of those things. Like, I can look at Taxi as an anthropological moment in time,
right, in a way
that Scrubs is like too close to me now. But just, you know, the like slow motion room entrance with the tiny little top and the wind machine, takes away from the stuff that I remember about loving about that show. And it's, you know, you can see Bill Lawrence moving away from it, you know, just dramatically over the last decade. And because he has come so far, it also makes it hard for me to look back and be like, I bet you regret some things now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Sarah D. Benting.
Sort of in the same vein. The one that actually holds up for me is Seinfeld, but I went through a process with that where for a while it was like too recent. Like I found it, you know, I was a fan when it was on, and then for 10 or 15 years, it was like unwatchable. Like I would hear the doop, 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 and like run out of the room, like Rod Stewart levels of no with that. And now, thank you, Dave.
So, hang on. That was Rod Stewart levels of no.
Yeah.
Yes.
Writing that down. Thank you.
Don't come at me with Maggie May as a result. Uh-huh. I trust you. Don't violate.
Oh,
that.
I'm with you. I got a story about Rod Stewart. I'll tell later.
Okay. Also does not hold up. Maybe now Seinfeld is sufficiently like vintage. It's not quaint. It just is like much more distinctly of another time than it used to be because duh, that's how time works. Hello, everyone. Professor of physics, Sarah D. Bunting. I think part of it is that it was a big deal in my 20s and it was a big deal to me in my 20s. And I just, it tended to bring me back there in a way that I just did not want to go. And now my 20s are very far away and it's fine. So Seinfeld is my holds up. There are, you know, obviously some problematic aspects of it, but also there for the vibe. And in all the ways that Catherine referred to, like, it's just not as bothersome to me because it is at a further remove. Mm-hmm. Buffy. Cashiered. Recent revelations, totally notwithstanding. I actually felt this way after I did a marathon diary probably half a dozen years ago now for previously.tv. And that's where I ended up at the end, which was... you know, I did this and now I'm good. The Whedon stand-in Xander is just this unbearable prospect at this point to me. Nobody on the show cared about internal logic of death and afterlife. Like if you're going to construct an entire season's big bad around a deistic idea, please understand how deistic frameworks operate. Like it's a god. You mention it five times an episode. Please figure out how that works for yourself. Please correct serious casting errors. You've had 22 episodes to figure this out. It's always just a tick or two more pleased with itself than it ought to be showing. I don't regret caring about it back then, and I don't think anyone else should regret caring about it back then, but I don't have to care about it anymore, and I don't think anybody else should either. Buffy, with, you know, thanks to Sarah Michelle Gellar for her yeoman service, no, doesn't work.
Well, I'll go next because we are actually rewatching. We're almost done rewatching Seinfeld now, and it does hold up. It's the problematic stuff, there's less of it than you would expect. Actually,
it is less than you think. Yeah,
there's not as much. But yeah, the finale of Seinfeld is more than 20 years old. That's how old it is. The premiere is over 30 years old. Mm-hmm. It's old. But yeah, I also had to let it lie fallow for a while because I watched it while it was on. And then I watched it in syndication like a lot. And when we needed another show, like a sitcom to watch, I was like, should we? Like,
ate
let's
the whole
see how
bag
it goes.
Of cookies of television.
Yeah. But it's been good, right? Dave, would you agree?
Yeah. I kind of forgot what a asshole Jerry Seinfeld is, though.
He's like, such an asshole, but I enjoy it.
But I mean, but not like sometimes it's for the comedy. But sometimes he's just like an asshole to women and there's not really a link to anything that's going on in the show. Like, it's just like his default is like, you know, hello, goodbye, throw him out kind of thing. And that's weird.
So, but sometimes and as the show goes on, they call attention to it more. Like when he breaks up with the one woman and has feelings about it and then he's like really upset and Elaine doesn't get it. She's like, you break up with a girl every week. He's like, I know, I don't understand it. But yeah. Anyway, there's a lot of shows that we have rewatched of late that I think have held up. Cheers, we did a couple of years ago. That was still good. And then after Cheers, we did Frasier, and that was still super funny as well. ER, Melrose Place is a show that I am deeply in at the moment, and it still entertains me very much. The Simpsons. I just
wanna say, ER slaps.
Yeah,
so
ER's
hard.
Really good. In the actual spirit of the question, I will say I'm never mad to watch the Mary Tyler Moore Show when we have occasion to. And when we first moved to LA, after grad school, like in the late 90s, E, for whatever reason, used to show old One Day at a Time reruns in the mornings. Like, and because it was LA, it was like at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I used to love watching those. The ones that are not so good, I've never found I Love Lucy funny. Sorry, culture. I still don't. I probably wouldn't break my neck to get to an old Home Improvement or Welcome Back, Cotter.
You really wouldn't. You'd break your neck to get away from a Home Improvement. Trust me.
Later seasons of Roseanne, but that's because they're bad, not because they're old. The middle
bad.
Run are still good. Roseanne's issues notwithstanding. And I doubt I would fuck with Dawson's Creek now, but I also hated it then. So that's a whole other separate issue. Dave.
Exact same argument that Catherine had for Scrubs. I'm going to put Friends on that list. I feel like it has all the same problems, and it is pretty much contemporary with it. Sorry, Tara. But when we were watching the odd episode here and there, I'm like, wow, that show is like 40% gay panic. It is.
It's true. I can't defend it.
Matthew Perry's condition is often legitimately upsetting.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it was actually Dave. I remember where we were sitting, actually, in your old house in Toronto, when he was like, when did he start turning into Jack Lord? And it was like, oh, my God.
Oh God.
Like, I think we had side bets on when he was going to die. It was really bad.
He made fools of us all. For the not working out one, I got three. And one of them is just like kind of how serious it took itself and how stupid it seems now. And that's Miami Vice.
Yes.
Because my two stand-up choices are sci-fi, I wanted to throw in a sci-fi that absolutely did not hold up, which was V, a show that I fucking lived for when I was a kid. Like, oh, it's
so
V-Day. But V-Day's not. No, V-Day means it's time for V. And then one that I suspect doesn't hold up as well as I think in my mind it does, and I've yet to prove myself right or wrong, but I suspect Northern Exposure doesn't stand up the way I
Northern
think it
Exposure.
Does.
Northern Exposure is good.
I bet
Northern
it's still good.
Exposure is still great.
Okay,
and
good.
It is, there are a lot of reasons. I mean, you know. Time.
Chris
time
in the morning
happens.
Is like less annoying to me now. I never thought I would see the day, but he, I like got through a whole episode without wanting him to shut the fuck up. So
I'm glad to hear it because that was like the first like quirky show that I really enjoyed. And then I always feel like I'm not sure if I should go back and revisit it because I'm afraid it won't show, you know, it won't hold up. And therefore I'll kind of ruin that sort of relationship I have with it. But that's good. But I mean, any show where a coffin gets flung into a lake by Trebuchet is, you know, gotta be good, right?
So yeah,
I mean, Trebuchet, you could stop right there.
There's another fantastic coffin joke in that show where somebody, a satellite lands on them from space, and then the coffin is just the shape of like a crazy space satellite with a body in the middle. This is so good and weird and stupid.
So my two choices for I believe holds up, certainly not in the visuals department, but I'm going to go with Star Trek, the original series.
Yeah.
And my number one choice would be Twilight Zone. And I feel like Twilight Zone is the furthest back, most holds up show that I could think of. You know, because it's dealing with such sort of basic universal truths or issues or scenarios. Like, yes, it looks bad. And there was those two seasons they shot on videotape that I actually cannot watch because it hurts my eyeballs.
Yeah, it's total same.
Turns out it was man.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
Why, it's time for the winner and the loser of the week. Tara has this week's winner.
The winner is Warrior! Got a surprise renewal for a third season. And the best part, it's at HBO Max, which means some people will actually probably be able to see it.
You know who made that happen?
What?
Me. That was my suggestion a couple months ago. So they're probably listening and we're like, oh yeah.
Good job, Dave. Yeah, so it's not going to be at Cinemax. It will be at HBO Max. And if you have not watched the first two seasons, which were originally on Cinemax, they are both also now on HBO Max, as we mentioned when we talked about it for the canon a few weeks ago.
Yes.
So please watch Warrior seasons 1 and 2 on HBO Max. You will not regret it. It's a good time.
Yeah, and one of the best recent themes for a TV show.
Great theme song.
Do not skip that credit intro ever. Who is our loser, Sarah?
Oh, Moz. Morrissey is now picking a fight with The Simpsons, who portrayed him in a recent episode as a racist meat eater. Look, even Ted Williams only batted 406, and they were batting 500 with that.
I mean, the issue is more like, why pay attention to The Simpsons in season 5000? Like, no one, The Simpsons is not relevant.
Well, and on The Simpsons side, why pay attention to Morrissey? He's been canceled since like 2014, but okay, you two can just go in a corner and fight with each other and nobody has to give a shit. So everybody's a winner, I guess, actually.
True.
Speaking about going into corner and not giving a shit, yet everyone's a winner. Do you know what time it is?
Game time.
All right, guys, welcome back to Game Time. This is the third Game Time of the season. Sarah has 1 point. Tara has 1 point. Value guess looking to get on the board. Today, we are playing Anime Bullshit from Noyemi and her brotherly unit, Joel, who earns themselves an extra credit topic of their choosing. She writes, Dave, this one's probably going to be a nightmare of pronunciation for you. Yay! Okay, then, let's get to it. No steel mills today, as for reasons you will see when we start playing the game. No equalizer challenge zones, because we're short on time. So let's get straight into it. We'll see who is going first.
We will start with Sarah.
All right, Sarah will go first, then Catherine, then Tara. Are we ready to play Anime Bullshit?
Yes. Maybe?
That's bullshit.
There are two parts to this game. All the questions are true or false.
Okay.
In the first section, I will give you a title. You tell me whether this title is anime or is not anime. That's all there is to it.
Okay.
Got it. Sarah D. Bunting. The devil is a part-timer. Is that anime or is it not? True or false anime?
True.
True. It is an anime about Satan getting a job at a fast food restaurant. The devil is a part-timer. Catherine. Kill La Kill. Kill La Kill.
How do you spell La Kill?
Kill La like La La Kill. Mm-hmm. Three words.
False.
That is true. It's an anime about a girl seeking answers about her father's murder at a supernatural high school. Her sword is also her clothes, which is very convenient.
Sure.
Tara.
Yep.
Monthly Girls Nozaki-kun.
True.
True is correct. It's an anime about a teenager who makes manga professionally and the girl who has a crush on him. Oh. Back to Sarah. Dogs can grow beards all over.
Ew. Oh, gosh. True.
That is our first false. That is a Christian metal song by The Devil Wears Prada.
Wow.
I was really sure the gag of this game was going to be they were all
true. They were all true. Same. I know. I was waiting.
Catherine.
Uh-huh.
So I'm a spider. So what?
Oh, I wanted it to be true, so I'm saying true.
True. It's an anime about an ordinary high school girl who is reincarnated as a spider monster in a fantasy world.
So what?
Tara.
Yes.
Didudu, didudu. And let me spell that for you. D-D-U hyphen D-U twice. Didudu, didudu.
False.
Is correct. That is a single by the popular K-pop band Blackpink. Back to Sarah. Flying Rhino Junior High.
Doo-da, doo-da. Flying Rhino Junior High all Rhino
day.
True.
False. That
Why
is a
not?
Canadian cartoon from 1998 about a surreal junior high.
Okay.
Back to Catherine. My mental choices are completely interfering with my high school romantic comedy.
Same. I'm going to go true.
It's an anime about a boy who can turn any multiple choice quiz he thinks about into reality. It makes more sense in context.
If you say so.
Yeah.
Okay. It would have to.
Tara.
Yes.
Bubblegum Crisis.
False?
True. It's an anime about an all-female group of mercenaries who don powered exoskeletons.
Okay.
And fight robots.
I love all of these.
Sarah DeBunting. The mass device, that's M-A-S-S, the mass device, the worms of death.
The mass device, the worms of death. False.
You are correct. That is false. That is actually a G.I. Joe episode title.
Sure. Yes.
Back to Catherine. Science fell in love, so I tried to prove it. Science fell in love, so I tried to prove it.
First of all, this is the title of your memoir.
Yeah.
Wow. There's a lot going on there. I'm going to go true.
Correct.
Nice.
About aspiring scientists falling in love and trying to prove the logic behind their feelings.
Aw.
Tutar.
Yes.
Get balsamic vinegar. Quick, you fool.
False.
Correct. That is a Snow Patrol song. Sarah DeBunting. Bo-bo-bo-bo. Bo-bo-bo.
Seven bows.
Bo-bo-bo-bo.
One angry Luke. I just feel like that's... Is it a song? Is it a snack? I'm going to say false.
True! Get this. What? It's an anime about a rebel who fights a tyrannical government with, guesses?
A bow?
Nope.
A bow staff?
Nope. His Gum. Nose hair.
Well, desperate times.
For Catherine, we have Santa with muscles.
Sure.
Santa with muscles.
False.
False is the correct answer. That is a Hulk Hogan movie from 1995.
Checks out. Story, yeah, story checks out.
Tar.
Yep.
Princess Tutu.
True.
Correct. Anime about a duck who is transformed into a mythical ballerina in order to save a storybook prince come to life. Princess Tutu.
Okay. I would watch all of these.
These are all great. I kind of want to watch the one with the nose hair.
Yeah.
Last title question for each of you coming up, starting with Sarah. In another world with my smartphone.
True.
By the Correct. Way, it's the title of my memoir.
About a high schooler who is accidentally killed by God and asked to bring his smartphone with him when he's reincarnated as compensation.
Everyone. I would watch everyone.
Yeah.
This is question 17.
Spread Eagle.
For Catherine. The incredibly strange creatures who stopped living and became mixed up zombies. That's two exclamation points and a question mark at the end.
I was going to ask if the punctuation was part of it.
Where are the exclamation points?
Right at the end. The incredibly strange creatures who stopped living and became mixed up zombies.
True.
That is a 1964 film billed as the world's first monster musical. Here's your last title question for Tara, okay. Then we'll go into a score break. Dirty Pair. Dirty Pair.
True.
Correct. Oh, intergalactic crime fighters who cause a disproportionate amount of property damage.
And that's my life story.
All right, let's hear the scores after our halfway mark.
Wow, it almost could not be closer. Sarah has 3, Catherine has 4, I have 5.
All right. Wow.
Let's get right back into it. Switching gears, we're now talking characters.
Okay.
You tell me if these are anime characters or not, true or false. To Sarah. Winry Rockbell. Winry Rockbell.
True.
Teenage surgeon and engineer from the anime Full Metal Alchemist. You don't need to tell me I'm pronouncing all these incorrectly. I already know. Catherine. Mm-hmm. Hero protagonist.
True.
False.
Damn
that
it.
Is a lead character from the cyberpunk novel Snow Crash.
That's why shot that.
Tara.
Yeah.
Panty Anarchy. Panty Anarchy.
Again, titled the memoir. True.
She is a fallen angel that battles ghosts from the anime Panty and Stocking with Garter Belt.
Mm. Wow.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah.
Mr. Wink. Mr. Wink.
Fuck. No idea. True.
Oh, it's false. That is the cave troll with mechanical hand from the movie Hellboy 2. Hellboy. Catherine. Princess Angelina Contessa Luisa Francesca Banana Fana Fobesca III.
True.
That is false. That is supposedly the real name of Dot Warner from the Animaniacs. Tara.
Yeah.
Kiss Shot Sorola Orion Heart Underblade.
I mean, that feels like so true. I almost feel like it has to be false. True?
Correct. Oh, Vampire nice. Princess.
Okay.
Sarah D. Bunting. My favorite character name, I think. Knives Millions. Knives Millions. Both those words are plural.
I feel like I have seen that character name before. So I agree that it is awesome, but I believe it is not anime, so I'm going to say false.
He is the main guy from Trigun. Trigun.
Not enough babies named Knives these days.
I think there's a Knives something else in Kill Bill?
Maybe.
Here's another good one for Catherine. Biscuit Krueger. Biscuit Krueger. Ask for it by name. Biscuit Krueger.
Biscuits.
How do you spell Kruger?
Like Freddy.
Sure. True.
Correct. Yay. She is from the anime Hunter x Hunter. She prefers to be called Bisky.
Of course.
You got it.
Tara.
Dogs could tell you that.
Yep.
Joey Jojo Jr. Shabadoo.
Oh!
I mean, yes, you're correct. Sorry.
That's
yes,
from
that is, of course, from
Dawson's
The Simpsons.
Creek.
Who would have thought anime bullshit would have a gimme for Tara, but here we are.
I remember when you called Joey Potter that in a recap.
Sarah D. Bunting, Lena Inverse. Lena Inverse.
False.
True. She is a powerful sorceress and the main protagonist of the anime Slayers. Catherine? Lord Embryo. Lord Embryo.
The lead singer of Frozen Embryo.
False.
False is incorrect. He is the main antagonist of Cross Ang, Rondo of Angel and Dragon series.
Man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, all right. This will take us into our second score break.
Okay.
Tara.
Yep.
Ceaseless Discharge.
Oh, wow. Memoir.
Yeah, true.
False. That is a tentacled lava monster from the video game Dark Souls. One of the hardest video games out there.
Coming up next week on 911 Lone Star.
Ceaseless Discharge.
There fucking better be.
Ceaseless Discharge is actually the name of Rob Lowe's cosmetic line.
Yep. Skincare line?
Oh, God.
All right.
It's made from exploding bull semen.
Everybody's got 2 questions left. What are the scores, please, Sarah?
Oh,
okay.
God.
Sarah has 4. Catherine has 5. I have 7.
All right. Back to Sarah.
All right.
Latifa Fluranza. Latifa Fluranza.
False.
False is incorrect. True. She is the princess ruler and manager of
RuPaul's Drag Race.
Imagi Brilliant Park. Catherine. Mm-hmm. Barkchivious Mingo.
False.
Barkchivious Mingo. False is correct. He is an outside linebacker in the NFL from 2013 to the present. Barkchivious Mingo.
That's amazing, because I was like, I bet I know that name, and it's from the Key and Peele sketch where they make fun of football names, but no, it's a real one.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Tara Ariana.
Yes.
Guybrush Ulysses Threepwood.
False.
False is correct.
Is that someone from the Nevers?
No, that is the self-described Mighty Pirate Secret of Monkey Island series. Yes.
Okay.
All right. Serenity Bunting. Radical Edward Wong Hao Pepe Lu Tivruski the Fourth. Tivruski the Fourth.
I mean, it has to be true. So that makes me want to say that it's false, but every time I confidently say it's false, it winds up being true. So, trolls. Just kidding.
Nice.
Thank you. I think it's true.
It is true. She is the 13-year-old hacker from Cowboy Bebop. Last question for you, Catherine. Gyro Gearloose.
Could go for a hero right now, though.
Same gyro.
I'm going to say true.
From DuckTales.
From DuckTales, correct. Yeah, inventor from
DuckTales. I'm hungry.
Tara, last question is for you.
Yep.
Catlia Baudelaire.
False.
Is true. Talented ghost writer in the anime Violet Evergarden.
Okay.
That was anime bullshit. Now let's get the bullshit final score.
Boy,
that's bullshit.
That was challenging.
Yes, it was.
Sarah finished with 5 points. Catherine had 6. I have 8.
All right. So Tara takes it. I just want to say there was a round 3 that we don't have time for. So I will find a way to put that up on the web somewhere, perhaps in the show notes. Perhaps I'll put it. We'll do it another time. What was all about plots for some of these things. So it got kind of crazy.
Wow. Oh, man.
Yeah. So stay tuned for that somewhere online. Make sure you follow us on Twitter or Instagram, and we'll get that up for your eyeballs somewhere.
Tara.
Well done, Princess Tara.
Thank you.
Well, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We sat down and worked things out between us and couples therapy before going around the dial with stops at Younger, Mythic Quest, Philly DA, Why Did You Kill Me, Sasquatch, and 911 Lone Star. Mademoiselle Caroline asks us which TV shows have and have not passed the test of time. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's anime bullshit game time. Next up, it's lotto numbers on Extra, Extra Hot Great, and on the next EHG Prime, 50K three ways. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Arrieta,
Panty Anarchy,
Sarah D. Bunting,
I'm hearing a little more than that,
and Catherine Van Arendonk,
I need to take my dog out for a walk. If you guys could just work this out amongst yourselves.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you right here next time on Extra Hot Great.
You know what? Why don't you talk for once? I feel like I tend to like dominate the conversation. So it's your turn.
Oh, one of my children is screaming. Sorry.
You need to take care of that?
So I think somebody is.
That's the spirit.